It's my pleasure today to introduce Mr. Bill Whitaker, President and CEO of J.R. Simplot. Simplot is one of the largest family-owned agribusiness companies in the United States. Whitaker has over 30 years of experience as an industry leader, including being president and CEO of Research Seeds, located in St. Joseph, Missouri, a Land O'Lakes subsidiary. He is also a past president of this association. Bill, I don't think that you and I can come together without my saying, reflecting back on the fact that he and I have known each other for over 30 years, and the way we got acquainted was through ASTA meetings. First meeting that I ever attended was the Western Farm Seed Conference meeting, and Bill Whitaker was that young guy with the big smile and the curly hair back there in the room that I was introduced to. The seed industry was a little bit different then. We all had mentors. And I know, Bill, you would want me to say that Bob Thenniger and Roy Edwards, the two executives of Research Seed, were certainly great people for you to train under. I know he's going to call Bob Thenniger, also a past president. He's going to call him this afternoon, tell him about this gathering with all you guys. For me, it was Professors W.O. Scott, who wrote the Title V portion of the Plant Variety Protection Act, and Alvin Lang, retired from the University of Illinois and then heading up Illinois Seed Dealers. So we had a chance then to grow up with mentors. I'm not sure that some of our young people do today. It was really a first class and a great experience to do that with those gentlemen. Bill, you've always impressed me with your creative thought and your hard work ethic. I really honor you for climbing as high as you have, as being a fellow seedsman and now at the top of one of the truly most outstanding agricultural businesses in the United States. We're interested in what you've got to say today because you get to see things from a different view than we do. The vastness of J.R. Simplot Company gives you ideas and thoughts of what's happening and also maybe a little bit clearer vision of what's to come. So Bill, come on up and we're anxious to hear you.
Thanks, Jim. I've got to see a lot of old friends today, and I'm genuinely disappointed because not one of you have told me that you haven't aged a year. And I kind of thought somebody would tell me that, but that hasn't happened because I have aged. Actually, since I was at this meeting last, I'm thinking it's been 12 years, and I'm going to be rounding off numbers today because precision with dates and times might not be my strong suit. So put yourself in my position. I'm someplace in my late 20s, and Bob Thenniger, who is the president of our company, said, Bill, why don't you go with me to the ASTA meeting in Chicago? And I'm going, oh my gosh. I'm going to Chicago. I'm going to the ASTA meeting. I'm someplace to the point that I have a jacket and tie or two. But for all practical purposes, I'm from Northwest Missouri. And I've been to Kansas City and Wichita and Topeka, St. Louis, Oklahoma City, Fort Worth. I've kind of been to a few places, I thought. But I got to go to Chicago to this conference, and it was huge. And Bob kept me at his side. He introduced me to literally everybody that he could introduce me to. And to this day, some of those individuals I've had the opportunity to see today, and we're all still part of this. But think about what that's like, and think about what it meant to have a mentor. But I could also think about how important it was because that started this meeting and what went on at this meeting started crafting my thoughts about agriculture. And I'll never forget first the seed. I'll never forget the impact first the seed had on me. I knew I wanted to be in agriculture. I knew I was about agriculture. Didn't exactly know how it was all going to shape. I didn't exactly know how it would all evolve. But what I did know is that I wanted to be part of agriculture, and first the seed had a sizable impact on me. But what really had an impact on me was the fact that I got to have experiences in the seed industry. I got to see a seed industry that explored itself, that grew with challenges and circumstances. But who would have thought that the seed industry would have come through some of the most unbelievable issues that anybody could ever have? I was talking to Andy just before the meeting, and I even made the comment. I said, you know, I'm not so sure, because I think it was probably all through the 90s, but I was the chairman, or at the time we called them presidents, of the American Seed Trade Association in 1998 and 99. At that time, you kind of wondered, how in the heck can an association get through what we had to get through? And I can tell you how it happened. Because everybody that participated in the seed industry, they participated as individuals, and we knew them as individuals, and we all participated literally at a level of how does this industry evolve, how does it mature, and how does it change? And I'm not so sure very many industries could have cycled through that. Now, the year I was president, I remember that I wanted to do something different. I wanted to make a statement, but I thought it was time for us to think different. Now, some of us might have been at that convention in Palm Desert. Some of us might have remembered on the opening night, instead of having I don't mean this to be cynical, but instead of having some gala opening night reception that involved really fancy napkins and ice carvings, I got to tell you, I decided to have a Harley-Davidson motorcycle party. Brought the local chapter of the Harley-Davidson Club to the party, had this really neat setting out on the lawn. And there was a time or two that Jim actually reminded me of this. There was actually a time or two that I literally had to go over to this one blonde and say, you better cool it. You need to kind of back off a little bit. After all, we're in the seed industry. But what we did is we had a great evening, but it set the stage that maybe that we can do things differently. We also that year decided that we weren't going to do this processional of previous officers and their spouses, and have the new officers come through, and I don't remember the music that was playing, but it was the grand processional with white dinner jackets, and we decided we weren't going to do that, that we needed to change an association. I had no grand plan on how we change an association. What I had in my mind is that we're going to have to be different, and we're going to focus on different things. Now, what we really end up with here is an organization that has led us through some really challenging times. Those times don't go away, and they're still going to be coming at us. Let me talk just a little bit, because I think it's important for you all to hear my perspective from being part of the Simplot company for the last 15 years. And I think the best way to do it is to show you just a short video clip on a little bit the scope and the way we think about the Simplot company. So if you bear with me on this video, here it is.
Throughout nearly the whole of human history, mankind was preoccupied with one thing: food. After all, it's difficult to find time to build, invent, create, theorize, or even dream when the focus of your existence is your next meal. But then a couple of pretty amazing things happened. The advent of modern agriculture and the Industrial Revolution. Before we knew it, we went from hunters and gatherers to builders and blacksmiths, philosophers and inventors, scientists and space travelers. Freed from the constraints of mere survival, humans began to unlock our near limitless potential. That's what agriculture does. That's what we do. Work each and every day to help improve the human condition. Our founder, J.R. Simplot, probably said it best: do well by doing good. That simple yet profound statement forms both the foundation of our commitments and the ways in which we follow through on them. So, just what are we committed to? We're committed to innovation. If there's a better way to do something, we're obsessed with finding it. That drive to discover and to invent can take us anywhere science can, from the study of plant genetics to the practical application of GPS technology. And it manifests itself in healthier foods, higher yields, and more efficient growing techniques. We're committed to sustainability. Our company was built from the earth itself, and so we feel a special obligation to care for its resources. How can our plants operate more efficiently? How can global food production be increased, all while the resources we use decrease? How can we protect our lands, our oceans, our wildlife, yet still meet the needs of a growing planet? The will to seek the answers to such questions is woven into the very fabric of who we are. An agribusiness company driving the intersection of agriculture, science, and technology. Yet even more than innovation and sustainability, we're committed to people. The most important truth any successful company can acknowledge is that they didn't get to where they are all on their own. The communities all over the world that we're fortunate to be a part of are absolutely integral to our success. And so we give back to them in a variety of ways, both corporate and personal. There is no force on this earth more powerful than the human spirit, so it is a resource that we both treasure and cultivate. We are all, nearly 7 billion of us, in this together. Our small part of making this world a better place is to try and make certain that food is abundant. Because when you don't have to worry about your next meal, you're free to pursue your dreams. And when people are free to pursue their dreams, that's exactly what they do. And all of our lives are made better for it. We're Simplot, and we want to help create better, healthier, easier to grow foods through the magic and the power of modern agriculture. Simplot, bringing Earth's resources to life.
So I don't know if you noticed the cowboy in the white starched shirt. That's not the way it works. We still do cattle the old-fashioned way on horseback. We ride the pens on horseback. We ride the deserts and the mountains and the meadows on horseback. And we still operate, we still are very, very hands-on with all of our cattle business. But let me tell you, we're hands-on with all of our businesses. We're hands-on with whether we're in the mining, whether it's our mining businesses or our retail fertilizer businesses, whether it's in our food processing business. No matter what we do, we are very, very hands-on and very, very active. So let me talk to you just a little bit about what's important to us, because it allows me to tee up the topics that I think is important for all of us as we look forward in agriculture. What's important to the Simplot company is to make sure that, number one, that we get it right with our employees, that every single employee really can adapt or adopt to the passions of agriculture, that those employees can be curious about agriculture, that they can pursue agriculture, that they can pursue one of the biggest challenges we're going to have in society and in life around the world, and that is producing more crop, more food, producing more with less resources. And it's just that simple. I don't want to create any simplicity around that, but that's the way I feel about it. Our employees, we spend a lot of time getting it right with our employees. Everybody will say your customer's number one. No, in our book it's our employees, because we need to enlist over 10,000 people. We need to make sure they're signed up every single day to support what we do with our customers. So customers, we have to get it right with our customers. We sell commodity products. Yes, we try to decommoditize these products. We try to do brand extensions. We try to brand more. We change packaging. But for all practical purposes, when we're in the agriculture business, we sell commodity products, and that's what we do at the Simplot company. We sell commodity products. But if we can create some level of value proposition that's unique to our customer, that we can look at and create this symbiosis that's only that hopefully is unique to our relationship that we have with our customers, we think we've created something important and good. So first, the employee. Second, the customer. Third is our communities. And when we're talking about communities, we're really talking about the fact that we are a rural company. Make no mistake about it. Our success is rural. Our livelihood is rural. And we are about those communities. And we will be in the future. That doesn't change. And we have a responsibility to the development. That constituency is very important. And of course, number four, that we don't lose, that constituency really is our industry responsibilities. We don't always sit at the leadership tables. We don't always get to sit at those head tables. Sometimes we're back in the cheap seats of industry sectors that we're involved with. But the point is, these industry circumstances are important for us. I gave you an example of the American Seed Trade Association, how it literally shepherded an entire industry through a massive amount of change and an unbelievable amount of change. I don't know what change. All that we know is change is going to happen in the future, and that being a part and supporting our industries, making sure that our industries are organized around the opportunities that we have, and that are, and they operate by the rules, and that we play by the rules. The opportunity that we see at the Simplot company all manifests itself in a word that we utilize, and sometimes I'm afraid that we make it trite. And the word's innovation. I kind of substitute the word innovation sometimes with intellectual curiosity, where we look at something and go, there's got to be a better way. We look at something and say, wow, boy, this just doesn't make sense, or this sure isn't the way to do it, or if we could do it this way. And giving our employees and giving our customers even the opportunity to have those type of discussion is very, very, it's very freeing for all of us, and it's very effective. We even took on this grand experiment. And that grand experiment was, let's take 25% of compensation, of the incentive compensation, and put it into an innovation component for every employee in the company. It's allowed us to take an innovative company. It's allowed us to take a company that has always been creative and created new things, and it's allowed us to focus on innovation, reward innovation, and also to stop and ask ourselves, what's innovative about what we're doing here? Or are we just perfecting the wheel? And frequently it's both, and that's okay. J.R. Simplot, what an incredible story, but when it comes to, I always tell people, I don't know if Jack spent a lot of time putting a stake in the ground saying, boys, in 30 years we're going to do this, or 20 years we're going to do this. What I do know is he had the ability to assimilate things that didn't make quite sense, or assimilate things that did make sense, or he had the ability to look around the corner. He could literally see what was around the corner. The frozen French fry, decades ago, 40 years ago, he actually told Ray Dunlap, the chemist that worked for him, that there's no way that the frozen French fry is going to work because you're just going to turn it into mush. Well, it did work, and Jack ran with it, and the Simplot company ran with it, and it wasn't mush. And the famous saying that Jack had was, well, I'll be damned, it really did work. And it really did work, and here we are today. To some degree, justifying the French fry as a health food, I guess. So, here's what happens: is agriculture is at an intersection. We've been at this intersection for quite some time, and that intersection is an intersection of agricultural, just standard agricultural production, and technology. And that intersection is where the world's going to have to play, and we're going to have to play not just on our own terms. We're going to play on everybody else's terms, but we have opportunities that we can utilize our communication skills. We can utilize our experiences. We can, you know, an example is we take our farms and ranches, and they're literally one big laboratory. Now, some people would say, oh, you're a corporate farmer and so on and so forth. I'm telling you, we don't feel like corporate farmers. We feel like a family farm. We feel like a family business. We feel like that when we are out there, we're no different than the neighbor down the road, and we work with our neighbors down the road. But if we can take the technology advancements and drive those through our organization, why not and why wouldn't we? And what can we learn? What can we experience so that we can make this contribution? We know that technology, you all are here from many different perspectives. But from our perspective, the technology advancements and the advancements we have to make in agriculture are holistic. There are circumstances from agronomics to genetics, of course, plant breeding, sustainability, food processing. The opportunities that we have with food processing is literally off the charts, and also the investment that you have to make literally off the charts. But you put all these things together, and we are at this intersection, and at the Simplot Company, we are embracing those things, but we're embracing them from a holistic point of view. Simply stated again, we have to do more with less, and we can do that. We have to eliminate waste. We have to make sure that we've created the efficiencies and the opportunities for all of us to participate in that type of world. Technology is going to play a huge role. It plays a huge role in our company. But we understand what sustainability means. We understand that because we took these farms, and Jack took these farms, and our farmers took these farms and ranches, and we've taken these things and we've taken our potato business and moved them forward in such a way that we've improved those farms every day. Now, we've been in this business for 80 years, the Simplot Company has. And I'm fortunate enough to say that when I am with our shareholders, which is the Simplot family, and by the way, they're involved with the business every day, that when I'm with them, I get to talk about the company over generations. We're very fortunate. We don't have to talk about quarterly reports. We don't have to talk about hitting some numbers for Wall Street. I'm not being cynical about you guys that have to do that. I'm just saying we are in a really, really wonderful spot because we can look at things like our farms, our ranches, our water supply, our plants, and say we have to improve these things and we have to manage the resources and the natural resources that we've been given in a very, very special way. And that work is not going to go away. So the major challenge really has us the fact that everything that we do, whether we're in agronomics of some type, whether we're in food processing, everything that we do, or whether we're in cattle genetics, whether we're in plant genetics, we have to stay focused on this sustainability story. I'm telling you, I know sometimes we get, there's a lot to it. Sometimes we get, what does that word mean? Well, I can tell you what it means to us is that we're going to have to do more with less. And we're going to have to make sure that we can intensify crop production in the future and utilize less resources. So recently, as an example, we built a new potato plant. The new potato plant was a really hard challenge for us. It sizably got our attention because we had to close three old potato plants. And I'm talking about 40-year-old type potato plants. But what was interesting of the potato plant is everybody came to us and says, you want more volume, you want more production. Well, no, it's actually we're going to replace pound for pound our production. What we really want to do is we want to use less natural resources. We really want to be in a position where we can prove to ourselves, prove to our customers, and prove to the entire industry that we can do more with less. So we put in this potato plant. It's one potato plant's the size of three that we closed. The sad part about that, it took out 800 jobs. I'll never forget the time when we sat in the boardroom and discussed this with our executive committee, and one of the family shareholders, you could see a tear come to her eye. And I just said, Gay, I'm just telling you that these potato plants will not survive long term in this world. They're inefficient and they're old, and we can spend hundreds of millions of dollars improving these plants. Hundreds of millions of dollars improving these plants. But I got to tell you, they're not going to survive long term. When you breed turkeys and eagles, you're still going to get a turkey. And we could have put a lot of money in. So the decision was made. It was very hard. We notified the employees 2.5 years ahead of time that we would be closing these plants. And I will tell you, it was a pretty spectacular circumstance, the way all of those employees brought it to the table. But let me tell you, the new plant, we put in a methane digester. So literally 100,000 MMBTU of energy that we can produce a year off the methane digester, just taking the waste and putting through the digester. We put LED lighting all the way through the entire plant. Now, if you can imagine, if you've ever purchased an LED light just for your house, we just put them in a kind of an alcove in the house, and I think they were like 30-some bucks a piece, but I don't want to get up there very often. But 1.8 million kilowatt savings per year. 1.8 million kilowatt savings per year. Wastewater treatment, 230 million gallons of treated water. For all practical purposes, this plant will use 30 to 40% less water per pound of output than those old plants. And these are critical factors and critical circumstances. We didn't build it for volume. We built it because we have a responsibility. Like everybody else in the room has a responsibility to create the efficiencies. And that's what I think is happening all around our agricultural industry. We recently were deregulated on our N8 potato. It is a product of biotechnology. It's a high value product. It's an important product to the potato industry. Are we going to chase, are we going to force that product into the market? No, we're not. Does it create value and distinct value to the potato industry around the world? Absolutely. What will we do with the potato in the future, somebody might ask? Well, no, as we're going to let the market come to us. We're going to make sure that we can continue doing creating the potato of the future. Potato has opportunity just like other crops, and we're part of that opportunity. We decided someplace in the vicinity, and I'm close to this, about 14 years ago, we decided that potato, that we had to focus on potato. It was important for us to create a better potato. Potato is an important crop around the world, so we're going to focus on a better one. So we're excited to have the approval. We're excited to have this potato. You might see it start being conversed on in the fresh market. But let's just see where it goes and what happens. So it's new to us, and we're not done. The work of potato will continue to go. So you put these things together, and we start thinking about the seed industry and what happens in the seed industry. This is the work that's being done. I think we have, all of us as agriculturalists, all of us in the ag industry, I think we have a social contract. And I think that social contract is about taking our message and enhancing our message about food and about agriculture and about the role we play. Now, it'd be easy for me to stand here and say, I'm not sure we've done a good enough job. actually, we probably haven't done a good job, as good enough job of what we were about and what we're doing. But we have challenges that are coming at us every day. And I just, I was looking at my Facebook page the other day, and one of my very best friends, and you guys will get to know her as Martha. And Martha made it, just had a post about food and about the fact that, boy, it just seems to me like when food production would just go back into the local environment and go back into a circumstance by which everybody was producing their own food. And I wanted to stop. Now, I have handlers, and my handlers tell me not to engage in those type of conversations. So I'm not going to engage in those conversations. But everything in my body wanted to say, Martha, honey, it's so much more complicated than that. And the complexities around what it's going to take to feed the world. Listen, you all have been there. You've heard all the speakers talk about feeding the world. But it's real, and it's not going to go away. And it's part of what we're doing. And I think the opportunity that we have is we really have to make sure that we're prepared to tell the story. One time, Jack Simplot looked at me, and we'd come out of a board meeting, and he was a little bit, I could tell he was a little bit kind of restless in the board meeting, and he'd seen me kind of take some challenges from the board, and he'd seen me probably stumble around about something I really believed in, that's something that I really thought was the right thing to do, but it wasn't coming together right. So we're in the hallway, and Jack looks at me, and, son, let me tell you, Jack never called me by name. He knew my name. I even asked him one time, you know my name? Yeah, but I have 10,000 of you to worry about. I'm not going to worry about your name. But I was the fertilizer boy at the time. But he said, if you believe in this, and if you truly think it's the right thing to do, don't let them wear you down. And I'll never forget that, because that's the determination that our company was built on. That's the determination that what happens when we have challenges and circumstances in our own company. And believe me, it's like your companies. They happen. They're part of who we are. But that determination really has to be part of what we're going to be doing in agriculture, and where agriculture is going, what agriculture is going to look like. That determination is we really are doing important work. And I don't know who the trusted source, I don't know who the most trusted source is to tell these stories. But I'm here to tell you that I think we all need to tell the story. I think it needs to be a part of our repertoire every single day, all the time. I think that we have to make sure that we're prepared to have the conversation around the Thanksgiving table or the Christmas table, or if we're at a Rotary Club or wherever we are. It's not so that we're antagonistic. It's not that we're not going to challenge everybody's thoughts. We're not going to polarize the industry. What we're going to do is say, there's an opportunity to take on agriculture holistically. There's an opportunity that we're all going to have circumstances by which we'll view the world differently. But more important than anything, we have to be able to tell the story. We have to gain a consensus around where agriculture is going, where it needs to go, what it's going to look like. I will tell you that I think agriculture will continue to embrace and will have to embrace the need, the technology. We'll have to take production agriculture and continue to marry it to technology. I was at on one of our farms one day, and I was in a conversation, and Matthew, our farm manager, we were talking about all the technology that John Deere had and all the technology that these tractors have. And he said, yeah, he said, you're not going to believe this the other day, Bill. He said, I'm standing here with the John Deere people, and we're getting ready to place our order for next year. Now, believe me, I don't understand why we have to buy tractors every single year, but they have us on a good cycle, and we're buying tractors every single year. But anyway, Matthew said to the John Deere rep, he said, gosh, he said, I'd really like to have whatever this technology and that technology on this year's order. And the John Deere rep looked at him and said, Matthew, you've had that technology for the past 2 years, for the last two orders. And I think that's a little bit of our problem. We don't recognize the technology that we have. We don't recognize the opportunities we have. And we don't quite know what to do with it because it's coming at us so quickly. I'm here to tell you that food production in the future will have the sustainability, of food production in the future will have to be sizably enhanced by technology. But technology comes, there's many, many tools. It's not about any one tool. It's about all the tools in the toolbox. And we're going to have to take advantage of that. If we can create a more efficient food, a safer food, a better food, a healthier food, and if we can create those things, but we're going to have to use all the tools. And I said it earlier, but it's not just about traditional plant genetics. It's not about biotechnology. It's not about agronomics. It's not any one thing. It's not about plants or storage. Storage is a big issue when you're dealing with vegetable crops. It's a huge issue. And the waste that goes on because of some of these circumstances is unbelievable, but it all feeds back into crop intensity and yield intensity, nutrient intensity, resource intensity. All those things play. At the Simplot Company, it was important for me to tell you the story from our perspective. It was important for me to make sure you understood where we come from and what we're looking at. Yes, we're fortunate we get the long view. Yes, we're fortunate we get to look at things over generations. I get to sit with a group of people that can say, what about 20 years from now, or what about 40 years from now? And it's pretty marvelous to be a part of that. So, how does the global population win? How do we make sure that subsistence nutrition that has called out at some place to 800 million to a billion people in the world, how do we edge into that, and how does that win? Well, it's not that complicated. We have to tell our story. And I want to challenge everybody in the room. I want to make sure that everybody knows that that there's opportunities for us. And I want to make sure that not just the American Seed Trade Association, but all of our regional agricultural associations, our institutions, that they tell the story too. Because some of them have sat on the sidelines. Some of them have sat on the edge and said, I think I'll just wait this one out. I think we'll just watch this. We have a responsibility to make sure that we embrace the technology, but we also have a responsibility to do it right. We're not going to do technology at the Simplot Company. We're not going to do technology just so that we can say that we did it. We have to bring value. We have to bring a distinct value to the population of this world. And I know that sounds a little bit like the so-called higher calling. I'm here to tell you at the Simplot Company, it is a higher calling, and it's an important calling, and we plan on being at the table. So one of my important takeaways today is that when I came here, I thought there's an old saying, you can't come back home, because it's been years since I've been here, over a decade, I said, and it really feels good to be back in the seed industry. It feels good to be close to you all. It feels good. Listen, there's a whole lot of mentors to me in this room. The seed industry shaped my values and my principles and my passion for agriculture. And I hope that we can do the same thing for the young people that are coming into the industry like it was done for me. And for actually quite a few of us, Jim and Mark, and I see people around here that we were all shaped by the seed industry. So thank you all very much. I appreciate the time. They tell me that we have a few minutes for questions. and I'm more than happy to take some of those. Yes. Oh, here's we have a microphone coming.
I'm still Michelle. Bill, thank you for your comments. Very inspiring. I want to talk about food waste and food nutrition. They said in the United States the food waste occurs at the table. Maybe we're producing too much, buying too much. And then there's a second part of it, which is nutrition, where we're maybe putting too many calories, useless calories on the supermarket shelves, so that poorer people are buying those food products that aren't necessarily the best nutrition. And then the second part of it is, in looking at our global customers, where the storage, and you mentioned this, is a critical component. It's the production piece, but it's also being able to store it properly for its usefulness and also for the food safety. So I've taught a few things in there. But it's, I've only got one chance to get your question into you.
Okay, so let me see if I capture the food. So food calories, I think there's an efficiency to calories. And so I'm one of those people that if I just look at food, I gain weight. So I'm really interested in calories that are not so dense. In other words, energy. When you have a really dense calorie, I need to stay away from those type of calories. But we have, I think as society, we still have an obligation to ourselves and to our society to allow us to make the decisions that we need to about food. I think that all those choices and all those decisions have to be at the table, they have to be on the shelves, they have to be on the menu boards, and I think it's going to be really, really important that we make sure that we're focused on a healthier food at all times. And that comes by when you're frying potatoes that you change the oils, that you reduce the oils. Then there's methods by which we can do these things. You can change the surface ratios of the potato. There are things that we can do. There are things that we can do with frozen vegetables. There are things that we can do in the avocado business. So avocados are a big part of our company, and what an opportunity for us to move a healthy oil forward. And the demand, by the way, is incredible. And the second part of the question was waste. So I get to spend time in some of the most remote parts, literally, of the world. And first of all, because I really want to be in those remote parts. That's, for some reason, just a huge part of my life. And I'm in India. And I'm trying to understand how the Indian system's going to work. And literally, where 50% of their produce is wasted, and that literally goes into waste. A lot of it's storage, and lack of refrigeration, lack of logistics support. This is why I say it's, there's not any one answer to feeding 2 billion more people. There's not any one answer. It's very complex, and it takes all the issues. You got to take all the issues and put them on the table, and we have to use all the tools. Food waste at the table, I don't know what to do about that. I can tell you my daughter doesn't take enough food at the table to sustain herself, so she doesn't waste anything. And if she did, I just eat it off her plate. But the point is I think the opportunity we have to not waste as much food as huge potatoes. If we literally had a non-browning potato, there's speculation that we might consider that we could save 400 million pounds of potatoes a year. That's a lot. That's 400 million pounds that wouldn't have to be grown and wouldn't have to have all the nutrients and pesticides and all the activity that's involved with that. So good question. I appreciate it. Oh, here comes one. And if anybody has any from the audience, just holler. How do we reinforce the use of biotech food and ingredients with food industry leaders? And you know what I think? That's a great question, because food industry leaders, you know, they have a brand. And they're typically brand. Some might say I'm a food industry leader. Maybe. I'm really a food and agriculture guy, and I believe in food and agriculture. But I think the real issue is that we can't force this environment. We can't force the technology on. We can't get any of the food industry leaders to get polarized. We can't get them in a position where they say, where they make a statement to protect their brand. They're, if you watch the food industry leaders, they're being very careful with what they say. They're approaching it from a very pragmatic way. And there is just a point that, from my perspective, the food industry leaders will come to the table. And let's face it, for all practical purposes, they already have. They've had to come to the table. I had a Coca-Cola guy that was speaking the other day, and I couldn't resist asking him a question about genetically modified corn and genetically modified in, as a general statement. And in all honesty, he did a really good job of answering the question. The reality is we have to let everybody take their pragmatic approach, and I think we're going to have to be more patient in some of these areas. Let's see, there's a great deal of discussion about beef production and consumption. What do you see as the future of beef? Well, right now the future of beef is extremely short supply. And with our cow herd and the number of cows we have in our feedlots, the cattle business is really important to us. But I think I don't see the beef production going away. Do I think beef production will spike? Beef consumption will spike in the United States? No, I don't. Do I see it going up and spiking in other countries? Yes, and we're experiencing that. We have a beef operation in China. We actually feed cattle in China. We raise hay, alfalfa hay in China, and we also have a small packaging facility where we take primals and actually package them up for the high-end restaurants in China. And I'll even say it goes so far as we have two restaurants in Beijing. Because we want to understand that chain. We want to understand the consumption patterns. We want to understand what's important to the Chinese, but not just the Chinese, all the developing nations as they look at protein. So I think beef's here to stay. I think that we have an obligation to create a more efficient animal. I think we have an obligation to manage a more efficient animal, and I think ultimately we're going to have an obligation to bring it together under more of an identity or traceable, identity preserved or traceable system. Do I think this cow herd will build back? I think it's going to take a while, and I don't anticipate the cow herd growing back very rapidly. Do I think the demand for the U.S. will increase? No, but I would predict that it's going to stay pretty steady for a while. Are there any issues in today's education system that you'd like to tweak? Oh my gosh. So I can't wait. In a couple weeks, I think it's the governor's office. Anyway, somebody in Idaho has William Bennett, coming to speak. And I have an executive committee meeting. But my executive committee meeting starts at 9. His speech is at 8. I've already told everybody, watch out. I'm not going to miss Bill Bennett, because I think he has some great ideas and some great concepts about education, and that's what he's coming to speak to us about. But yes, there's absolutely things that we can tweak. Now, I'm not going to get into all the details, but when it comes to production agriculture, I think there's an opportunity for us to do this. We've seen it happen with Nutrients for Life. And for those of you, Andy, you're real familiar with it, but Nutrients for Life is an exact example. And it basically talks about what happens with nutrients for crop production, and we've been able to go into schools all over the United States and tell a story about the utilization of nutrients and what it is and what crop production is and what the food is about that we are eating. And I think that that has to be part of our story, and we've got to figure out a way to get into it. And I think that we're going to have to step up again, all of us, and I think we're going to have to be ambassadors for agriculture. Yes, another one. And if anybody wants to ask one with a microphone, feel free, because some of the writing is very small. What is Simplot's strategy for public acceptance of your new low acrylamide potential reduced black spot bruise, potato, how you avoid a repeat of public backlash with that, like Nature Link or Nature Mark potatoes. This isn't, here again, we get to look at the public acceptance and what we're doing with potato. If you go back to what our first challenge and our first obligation and literally a driving mission for us is to improve the potato. Well, one of the things to improve the potato is we have to know as much as we possibly can about the potato. Yes, we did get deregulated, and yes, we have reduced black spot bruise significantly and acrylamide significantly. But are we going to go, like I said, are we going to go force this into the market? No, we're not. Are there opportunities in the market? Yes, there are. Probably the fresh market, and probably be like fresh cut, fresh chilled, those type of markets. Because here, I think it's about pragmatism, and I think it's about making sure that we don't take in whole sectors of the industry, such as the frozen food industry, or the frozen potato industry. So we're going to be very pragmatic about it. We're going to be very transparent about what we're doing. And that we're also going to make sure that everybody knows that we're going to focus this around an enterogenic approach to the potato. And we're not done, because if this is our only shot, and this is our only shot, I can tell you we'd be forcing this into every market we can. This is not our only shot, and again, we get to look at it over the long view. And then how will we respond to public backlash? With transparency, and with basically we're not going to pick a fight. This is important work, and it's important work over generations. We've spent 14 years doing this important work, and we're not going to try to create an unnecessary anxiety over the next few years. It's really about making sure that there's a story to be told about agriculture, and there's a story to be told about new sciences and new technology, and that's what we're doing with potato, and that's why it's important to us. Now, we might get caught right in the middle of something, and I'd be very sorry, but we're not going to fight in the public. So, anything else? There's one someplace. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Andrew Greenwell. I was just wondering, what do you think it is that makes agriculture such a, I guess, defensive industry? You look at technology, healthcare, construction. These are all industries that people can get behind. What is it that makes agriculture have to be ambassadors?
Boy, well, first of all, Andrew, that is a fantastic question. So I grew up, and coming through high school and being spending my weekends, every weekend that I possibly could, out, you know, with the farm, I mean, on the farm and doing whatever I could do. And I can remember that we used to talk about how spectacular farmers were and how the feel-good notion of the American farmer and the spirit of the American farmer. And someplace along the way, it got into big industry and big concepts of industry. And I don't know where we lost ground on it, but I think a little bit of it is this concept or notion that the American farmer is going to feed the world, and now we're going to have larger companies or this kind of predominant way of approaching agriculture. And I can assure you that the American farmer's, first of all, not going to feed the world. I can tell you the world's going to feed the world. And if we think the American farmer's going to feed the world, we're mistaken. They'll play a huge part, and it's going to be a huge balancing act. But it's very complex. But I think more than anything is, I think what comes around goes around, what goes around comes around, and I think we have an opportunity in front of us, Andrew, that we can take advantage of if we tell our story and we're transparent and we just make sure that everybody understands the values and principles of agriculture. That's a great question. Anything else for me before? Okay, in closing, thank you. I appreciate being a part of this morning. It's really special for me to get to see old friends and be part of an industry that shaped me, and I'll never forget this. So thank you. Thank you.
Bill, thank you very much for being a friend and agreeing to come out here and do this for me. It was very special. I would also point out that Bill has also agreed to stay around until later today and meet with our college students that are here. And I would invite all of you in the audience to greet those college students that you see out here and tell them about the seed business and go look at our poster competition in the next room. It's a very good competition. John?
Thank you, Jim. Thanks very much, Bill. Really, really interesting. Before we break, I'd just like to provide a few quick reminders. Tomorrow's session with Ag Economist Don Bassey will begin in this room at 7 o'clock. So, love to see you there. Please put it on your schedule. Also, if you're looking for CCA credits, there is a sign-up sheet in the back of the room. Want to thank you all for attending, spending this time with us this afternoon, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning. So thanks very much. Have a great afternoon.